The Place to Be podcast is a proud member of the History of WWE.com website. The History of WWE.com features thousands of complete cards and detailed results from throughout wrestling history from multiple major promotions, in addition to outstanding columns and reviews. It is now also the official home of the Place to Be podcast and Scott and Justin's pay-per-view reviews. Visit us at thehistoryofwwe.com or on Facebook by searching for the History of WWE or the Place to Be podcast, because the History of WWE is indeed the place to be.
Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rick. What? Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be. Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color. The Grandy Man can...
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this?
Yeah.
Because I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and I figured it would be fitting with tonight's topic to have an intro from The Clash. And of course, with me as always, my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, Mr. Rosero, my PIC, JR, and good evening, everyone, on this Thursday evening, number 62 of the Place to Be podcast.
A little Jabba Chamberlain action.
Jabba Chamberlain, there we go. Big Jabba, getting his elbow reconstructed, right? Is his elbow or his shoulder?
Tommy John, yep.
Tommy John, so which means he'll throw 101 miles an hour next year, most likely.
Hopefully.
Well, I hope so, too. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Place to Be podcast. It is the second of the week, and that, of course, means that we will head into that big steel enclave known as the Vintage Vault.
Guess what? I didn't bring the keys.
I already had the door open.
Okay. We're not gonna,
so we don't have to come up with some strange...
Well, it's a little wet, right? Because we had to carry it across the pond, so...
That is true. I mean, did you realize the shipping... we need some PayPal. You know what we'll do? We'll print out our reviews and sell them.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Never mind. Somebody else already did that. Never mind. Somebody already took that idea. Never mind.
Damn it.
But anyway, yes, we had to move the vault through the channel for tonight. For tonight, it is the one that you thought you'd never see.
Over 80! welcome you to the grandeur, the spectacle, the pageantry of SummerSlam.
The British Bulldog's gonna win whether he wants to or not.
I'm surprised he didn't do a lot of interviews outside pubs. The guy's throwing up out the window. And
why would he not want to win?
I know, exactly. It's all that warm beer they drink. Anyway, of course, as you can tell, we are not in Madison Square Garden or Rosemont Horizon or Summit in Houston, or we're not even in at the Sky Dome, or we're not even in Vancouver or Montreal. We are far, far away. The furthest we've ever been with the Vintage Vault. Hope it doesn't rust. Well, it's stainless steel. It won't rust. For tonight, the Place to Be podcast brings you the first WWE pay-per-view outside continental North America. It is SummerSlam 1992. I was a little off on that open because usually we have the cool music. They would play the cool music during the weekly reports.
Yes.
The Mean Gene reports, but they didn't play it in the open there. Vince wanted to get all jacked up and let it all out immediately. Now, I have a kind of a sad memory of this show. I did watch it live, since I've watched almost every SummerSlam live. But this one was tough because, again, as usual, I had friends coming over. But a few days before, my grandfather passed away, my father's father. So the funeral was that day. So my mother, my dad didn't care, but my mother was kind of weird at the things like that. So she said, should probably cancel. I said, okay. So my dad and I watched it, just him and I. So it was kind of a special moment. You know, he was kind of in the dumps, but he got to enjoy it. So kind of a special night for that. So I didn't want to ruin the mood, but I just want to say that was a kind of a special evening of watching a pay-per-view. So it's one of I think it was the last pay-per-view I think my dad and I ever watched together. So, but it was a good show, and we're going to talk about it tonight. And you, of course, watched it live, I imagine, right?
Yes, but actually yes. It was not live.
Well, yes, technically it was not live. They pulled off something that no one could get away with now. You just can't get away with it now. And that is, of course, taping a pay-per-view and airing it later. Just can't get away with it now in the day of the internet era. So the show was actually on Saturday, August 29th, 1992, but aired on Monday night, August 31st. So it is kind of weird when you see the actual date.
Yeah, 2 days
of SummerSlam. It's not the Monday that it aired. It's the Saturday that it actually happened.
Right.
But crazy. It technically aired on August 31st.
Now, I'm curious if any of our listeners, I mean, obviously I was not, I was only 11, so I was not into any kind of smart community, but I'm curious if anyone was a Observer subscriber or any kind of hotlines that used to be around back in the day. Did they have spoilers for this at the time? You know, did you guys know any kind of news groups? Like,
nothing.
I'm curious. Well, I know you didn't. I'm curious if our listeners, if anyone out there was aware. I'm sure there was something getting out.
Yeah, I would think something on, I don't know, Prodigy, I guess, was the source back then.
Is that even around then? I'm thinking more like the news groups, like the rspw.org, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that kind of stuff had, it knew what was coming from Saturday to Monday. But
yeah. No, I'm curious too. But no, I remember not knowing anything. Obviously, it was a lot of stuff going on, so wasn't privy. But I don't remember hearing anything. Obviously, the superstars and the All American on Sunday was taped, so they didn't.
Right.
They obviously were promoting it as if it hadn't happened yet. So
those must have been weird shows. I'm going to be getting there and watching my superstars on classics.com. So I'll be curious to see how that episode played out that day.
Yeah, I'm curious as well.
Even weirder must have been on USA. I think they used to still show something, right? Maybe they had like the SummerSlam Spectacular that night, usually the same night as the show. They used to have something. It wasn't like it was totally dark on USA.
No, they probably had. I'm sure they had something. Yeah,
something.
Yeah. So yes, the show actually took place on Saturday night, August 29th, and aired on pay-per-view on Monday, August 31st. Wembley Stadium in London, England. And obviously, this would be their last major pay-per-view for almost 5 years. And then after that, they would do pay-per-views strictly for the country.
Right.
Or the region at that point. We'll get to those when we get down the line into 97 and 98.
And now, of course, if you also heard that open, you heard a voice we haven't heard in a while. That is, of course, Vince McMahon.
Yep, VKM.
Yep, Gorilla Monsoon out of the booth for this show after his one stop back in at SummerSlam last year.
Right.
Vince McMahon returns. I think this is, what, his first show since SummerSlam 90 for Vince. So
yes. Yeah, usually
a
Vince.
A 2-year layoff.
Right. Vince pretty much only did, actually, I shouldn't say he only did SummerSlams, because his first, well, let's see, he did
WrestleMania 2.
He did a piece of WrestleMania 2 and SummerSlam 90, that's and that's pretty much it.
So he'll get into a little bit more of a run now coming up, and then of course he hits his crazy run where he does like every show for like 4 years. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much the same crew for the mid '90s. But obviously, we'll let you know who that is when we get there. Yeah.
So Vince and Bobby do this show here.
Yes, Vince McMahon and Bobby the Brain. I don't think Gorilla's even on the on. I don't think he's backstage.
Yeah, no, he's not here at all. Yep.
No, he's not here. I'm sure he's there. He's probably sitting in the position, but he's not on camera. 78,927, which still is, of course, a SummerSlam record. Probably one will never be broken unless they go outdoors again. Buy rate of 1.5. But this show made a hell of a lot of money, though.
Yes.
You mentioned to me before we went on the air. The buy rate seems very normal.
Well, they said between ticket prices and merchandise, it was $3.6 million. Yeah. Over $3.6 million.
Yeah. Well, you know, over there, and this isn't a knock. I'm not saying they're suckers or anything. But the British, when shows are there, they scoop up everything. They buy everything under the sun. You know, they even buy the cheesy stuff that, like, we Americans don't, like foam fingers.
Well, especially at that time, Europe and England are very starved for wrestling. England's still very good, pretty big hotbed for wrestling. But at that time in the early to mid-90s, they loved their WWF action. You know, Germany and England and Italy and those countries all used to, you know, be crazy when they'd go over there for those tours. So
yes, absolutely. So they not only was it a hot crowd of 78,927 and a buy rate of 1.5, but almost over $3.5 million in revenue. So this was most certainly a success. But again, they would not go back to England for a major pay-per-view again. They would go back for their own pay-per-view starting in 1997, but we'll get there. Now, before we get into the meat and potatoes, there are dark matches. However, this is a little weird, the way that this is laid out.
Yes. Obviously, tape show, they could finagle things a little bit.
Yeah, they can tighten it up a little bit and give you the best and then kind of save the rest for, you know, free shows.
Right, but there were two actual dark matches before the show started.
Yes. The first dark match, and the happy part of this, for me, is that I actually get this out of the way. So for, believe it or not, he is...
I got the American flag, American flag, American flag.
You can continue to...
I got my 2x4.
You can continue to play the song as much as you want, and it will still be more than the amount of airtime he got on this show. For, I guess... After 5 years of cheap wins, boogers hanging out of his. Goatee and other sordid babbling nonsense. It finally seems as if someone's no longer the flavor of the month in this company. For the first time in his career, Hacksaw Jim Duggan is in a dark match. Yeah.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Haha, a dark match.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Dark match. Well, you'll be beating people up off camera. This is great. Yes. Hacksaw and his own, the Bushwhackers, even better. This is great. What a great way to start this show. Three idiots, not even on camera. They win. Well, got to throw them a bone somehow. They end up beating the Nasty Boys and the Mountie. Poor Mountie got stuck in a dark match with these morons.
I know. This is your dream team right there, huh? Duggan and the Bushwhackers. Good thing Guy Martell is out here. He wouldn't be able to stand up.
Yeah, exactly. I have to listen to him drool on the air. And, of course, the Mountie eats the pin. Even worse. I can't hear you. The mic's not on. Can't hear you. We're on the air. You're not. Excellent. The second dark match pitted El Matador, Tito Santana, taking on this relatively new character, but not really new in the sense that this is his first actual pay-per-view match. Yes. And that is the mysterious Papa Shango.
Papa Shango is what Alfred would say.
Yes, exactly. We saw him at the end of course, our last vault, WrestleMania 8, running in to help Sid Justice take out the Hulkster and then get chased off by the Ultimate Warrior.
And
but this is first.
And this is quite the precipitous drop for Papa Shango because he had a pretty hot feud going with Warrior and Superstars. He was really built up strong on those Superstars episodes, like a legit scary monster. They really put him over big time. And this whole card is kind of weird, and we'll talk about it as we go along, because a lot of these guys feuding on the show, these feuds didn't really start up until a couple weeks before, it seemed like. But throughout the summer, a lot of these guys were in different feuds, and Shango and Warrior had a major feud going. It's kind of weird that, you know, it blew off before they got to the show, but as you can see, quit the fall for Shango.
Yes. He does get a payday for the show, but not as good as it would have been if he was obviously on camera. No. But he does defeat Tito. Just to add up to Tito's loss total.
Yes. Another L.
Another L for El Matador. And then finally, the third dark match.
Now, talk about dream matches. I don't have to tell you, as an 11-year-old, how excited I was. Mm-hmm. For Tatanka versus the Berserker. I mean, I was in a dreamland waiting for this match. Two of my favorites, especially the Berserker, after I got hosed at WrestleMania 8 when his match was cut. What the fuck did they do to me again? They cut him again.
Ugh.
And the worst part is this match was still tabbed to be on the card because it actually takes place right before the main event. And you could tell because the lighting is darker for this match when they finally aired it.
Yep.
And I guess when they edited it all together and put the package together, they realized they weren't going to have time for it. So pretty disappointing on my part that they had this match, you know, pegged for the broadcast and they had to cut it again. Yep. Screwed. Now, at least unlike the Bulldog match at WrestleMania, I got to see this match because they re-aired all three of these matches on primetime throughout the fall of 92.
Yeah. So these matches were not it. You think that'll make you feel better? Go ahead. I wonder if Jim Johnston ever got a job somewhere else that I don't think any of these songs are on his resume package.
Well, they didn't do it. These are the Simon Cowell specials. I don't know how much Jim Johnston had to say in these.
Yeah, clear. Of course he didn't. I wouldn't either. But anyway, those are the dark matches. Three of them total. Well, technically two real ones and then one that was cut later. Because you could tell, as Justin said, the show started, I think it was probably like any other late afternoon, probably a 4 o'clock start.
Yeah.
And the dark matches were probably at, you know, 3:30.
It might have been, I don't know, it's weird because it starts getting darker, I think, during the world title matches when it starts to first get a little dark. And then the last couple matches are pretty dark. But
yeah. So let's put it this way. If it started at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so maybe it started later. Maybe it started
might have been more like five.
Five. So let's say it started at five. These matches, the Papa Shango, Tito, and the tag was probably like at 4:30. The Tatanka Berserker match was probably like at 7:30.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah. It's definitely, I have all three of these matches on tape, actually. My cousin taped them when they were on primetime or something, and they're on one of my tapes somewhere. So I've seen them, and yeah, they're about what you'd expect. But Tatanka Berserker, always special place in my heart.
Yes. Actually, that's a match that I would have probably enjoyed as well. My dad, I think I remember asking him. I think he asked where Jim Duggan was, because I think he remember seeing him on the old shows. And I said to him, "Never you mind, go pop the popcorn." But anyway, all right. Enough of the dark matches. Let's get down to business. Because for me personally, after having a not, this is even better to start the show for me. I don't have to look at Jim Duggan or the Bushwhackers.
I've been watching you for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man in me, and never has been. This is love. This is more than a crush. Yeah.
It was Harlem at the Ruckers. The night I feared for a long time. Our long-running shtick must be put away in the drawer.
Yep. It was a very tough night that night in London. I thought it would be a nice evening of walking across Buckingham Palace and down the Channel. And unfortunately, things did not go well. There were issues. And on this night, the bromance came to an end.
Well, temporary end.
Temporarily, but it's a long one.
Yes, it is a long one.
It is a long hiatus, but yes,
we are all going to miss Uncle L singing Hey Lover to us once a week.
That's right. Because at this point, it's beyond a crush. I am crushed.
Yes. And speaking of crush, we'll talk about him later.
Yes,
but
exactly.
Over the spring of 92, Vince felt Legion of Doom was starting to get a little bit stale. They had their issue, you know, back in February where they lost the titles on the house show to Money Inc. So they brought back Paul Ellering, and a few weeks later in June, they had vignette of them digging through their wreckage of their former home in Chicago. And amongst the charred debris, they found a ventriloquist dummy named Rocco. Apparently Rocco was Hawk and Animal's only friend back in the day when they had no one else to talk to when their parents are fighting or some nonsense that the story they tell. And what ends up happening is Ellering takes Rocco and says he can help us, he can be our inspiration, and we're going to use him at ringside. So throughout the LOD's matches for the rest of the summer and into here, Ellering would have this dummy Rocco ringside, and he would do bad ventriloquist voices throughout. So there you go, there's Rocco. So I'm sure you wish it was you that Paul Ellering was holding at ringside, but
I don't have the words to describe the disappointment and grief that I felt over my perfect romantic utopia ruined by a dummy. They thought they could sway me by having naming it Italian, you know, Rocco. You know, your cousin thought my name was Rocco, so maybe that's a. But no, didn't work. Didn't work. Disappointing, heartbreaking.
So oh god, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying of all the awesome things that have gone on in their careers, the scaffold matches with the Midnight Express and the wars with Dusty and the wars with the Powers of Pain and great feuds. We're left with the greatest tag team of all time and a dummy.
And Rocco.
Hey, don't say anything about Paul Ellering that
no,
way.
I'm talking about you.
All right, so, very fragile right now.
So what happened here is after this show, Hawk, Mike Hegstrand, was pissed off at the company, disgusted over the Rocco stuff, felt that they were being humiliated and taken advantage of. So they were in London, and after the event, him and Jim Nord, the Berserker, went AWOL. This went missing. They missed the flight back, and Animal stayed around. So Hawk was quickly fired and released. Animal, similar to Mike Rotundo back in 1985, made the right decision and decided to stay around and finish his contractual obligation. So he started teaming with a man we'll see later, Crush, as the new Legion of Doom, doing some house show work. And then he eventually injured his back and was forced to the sidelines. So that ends their run in the WWF for now.
And as much as I was very disappointed in Hawk and, you know, just his general antics and behavior, I agree with him 100%. They were treated like crap.
Yeah.
And I it still bothers me to this day the way Vince treated these guys. I really do. But what are you going to do? Any event, they are in the opener here.
Mm-hmm.
And they take on the now former.
What?
Yep. Former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. What a great match this would have been if either team had won. This is more than a crush. I don't think I've ever heard this part of the song.
Oh, so we had to hear the whole song at least once.
I know.
All right, so continue.
So anyway, yes, the four. This would have been great if either of these teams had the belts. What a great title match. In any event, they don't. The other team on the other side of the ring, the former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and speaking of, you just mentioned him, IRS, Irwin R. Scheister. Yes, Money Inc., no longer the tag team champions.
And DiBiase has a swank white tights here.
Oh, tremendous alternate
swank
tights.
Swank white tights.
Yes, white tights, white boots, white knee pads. Awesome.
Beautiful. One of the best wrestling outfits of all time.
Yes. It's almost as cool as, if I do the math right, 27 years later. No, 17 years later, when Shawn Michaels came out with the cool white outfit with the white hat at WrestleMania 25. Second best ever use of the color white in a wrestling outfit. Shawn Michaels, number two, and Ted the Million Dollar Man, DiBiase, number one.
Yes. So, to me, this is the first time you really get the scope and the feel of this arena. When the LOD ride their Harleys down, or whatever motorcycles they were, down to the ring.
Yes. Yep.
That's when you first get that big look at the arena and just realize just how many people were there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the wide shot. Yeah, the wide shot's impressive, but wide shots are always impressive. This is different, though. I mean, the huge, long ramp and, just the wide shot of the crowd. It seemed like we'll know in the future, at future WrestleManias in big venues, just the ramp from the entrance to the ring seemed like it took forever. It was just so impressive. Not as impressive as the match, which was okay.
No, and Animal has actually said this was, on their DVD, he said this was his favorite match for them as a team, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it's the atmosphere.
I guess, because the match, I think this, honestly, the quality of the match is often overlooked because of the atmosphere, and everyone's just kind of getting used to looking at the look of the stadium and right. The atmosphere and the surroundings, and you kind of don't realize what a pedestrian match this is.
It really is. It's fun, but it's not, it's not great.
No. And a little flat, it's supposed to be a title match. The titles were taken out of the picture, and it wasn't really a high. I mean, I guess there was some lingering issue from February since the LOD had lost the titles to Money Inc. But, I mean, it wasn't really brought across on TV that well. So, it's kind of a heatless opener. But the crowd's into LOD as always, so the match itself is just fine. There's nothing much to it. LOD now wins when Animal pins DiBiase with a power slam, so they don't even get the device in.
No, they don't. So it's a bummer, and just the whole beginning, it's just so disappointing. And what started off red hot 1 year ago, well, 2 years ago, but really it hit their zenith a year ago at the Garden.
Yep.
And they had their big moment at Survivor Series in the main event, and then just after that, everything just seemed to slide.
Well, SummerSlam pretty much told the story of the Legion of Doom's first run. They debut at 90, peak at 91, and leave at 92.
Yep. Yep. So. And it was a great 2 years, but, it could have been better if treated better,
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? We got to move on. And shall we mention the change, or should you want to wait till
later? No, we'll save it for the change.
We'll wait to let you know who
yes.
Money Inc. lost to. When they come up on the card in a little bit. So there's your opener in what will be their final pay-per-view match as a tag team for over 5 years.
On WWE.
On WWE, yeah. They make pay-per-view other places. But it's close, though. I mean, they don't come back. They don't head to WCW until 96, so.
No, they come in. They have two separate runs. Like, Hawk is there by himself a couple times. And then Animal, I think, has one appearance as well. And then, yeah, they team back up for the first time, I think, in 96 over there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, they have a actually, it's on the DVD. It's an exceptional match. I don't remember if it was on a Nitro or if it was Super Brawl or something. They face Luger and Sting.
Yeah, that was, I think it was pay-per-view. So.
Yeah, I think it was Super Brawl or something like that. It was early in the year in 96.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever their February or March pay-per-view was, it was Super Brawl or one of those sold out.
I think it was Super Brawl, I'm pretty sure.
So. Yeah, I think it was Super Brawl too.
All right, we're getting out of it. So let's move on to match number two.
Yes.
Featuring a newcomer and an interesting newcomer.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Who's the boss now? boss man. That was the first beating in a long line of beatings. You're in my prison now, but I have thrown away the key, and there's nothing you can do about it, and no one can stop me now.
Of course, that is the voice of Nails, portrayed by Kevin Wacholtz. In May of 1992, we began getting random promos of a mysterious voice. We'd see a cell door, and this man was claimed to be in prison and had been abused by the big boss man when he was a prison guard. Mm-hmm. As the promos reached into June, he claimed he was nearing his release from prison and he would be taking out his revenge on the boss man very soon. And this always befuddled me as to why they would let him out of prison when he was threatening this guy from prison on national television.
Yes, exactly.
Even more confusing is Jack Tunney and the dude who have hired this guy.
Yeah, well, they'll regret that.
That debuted in late June, came through the crowd after Big Boss Man squash match, and destroyed the Boss Man. This was one of the most brutal, I just rewatched it recently. That's one of the most brutal televised beatings to that point in WWF history.
Yes.
He destroyed him. He kept beating him with a nightstick. Brutal. It went on for 5-6 minutes. And Boss Man was just beaten and battered. And they had a picture spread in the magazine where Boss Man was just all bruised and he had ice all over him and he was just really fucked up.
Yeah.
And they had him stay off TV for a couple months. And looking to get revenge on Nails is Boss Man's good friend, the man. V-I-R!
G-I-L! Yes.
So Virgil coming to look for revenge from Nails. Also, as Nails started wrestling on TV each week, he debuted a finisher that was a chokehold. And Vince would bitch every week that he was a choke, and you know, he never got DQ'd or anything, but Vince claimed that his arm was slipped under the chin and onto the throat. So a little controversy there. And of course, Nails is portrayed by Kevin Wacholtz, who was also known as Kevin Kelly in the AWA as a jobber. So,
and what's amazing about that is, and you remember you and I watching these AWAs that are on that have been on ESPN on late Friday nights. I taped 18 tapes worth, because a lot of those AWAs I used to like as a kid, and I'm glad that ESPN2 aired them in half an hour blocks on Friday nights. I think they still do. And this guy looked like, I mean, he had long blonde hair and he was a pretty boy. Mm-hmm. He was a well conditioned pretty boy. He was managed by I want to say Sherry Martel.
Might have been. I think she managed everyone in the AWA.
Well, yeah, that's true. She was the only female anyway. But, yeah, so he was – it's amazing. And I recognized him.
Him on camera. I just checked. He was managed by Sherry.
Yeah. I remember recognizing him. Like, what the hell happened to this guy? He was like a pretty boy and he had blind – he looked like the old school Rockers version of Sean. And then he's here, and I'm like, what the fuck happened to him? He looks like a train wreck. At least they made him look like a prison.
Yeah, they did a good job. I mean, I dug the character. I thought, you know, for as little as he could do in the ring, I thought it was actually a pretty good character. And a storyline that you'd expect them to do at some point when they had a cop character for this long. You figured at some point they'd have a disgruntled ex-convict. It's just funny how they never make mention as to why they hired this guy.
I know.
So he's confused me. So.
Yeah, well, we will see over the long haul that Vince will regret hiring this guy, and we'll tell you why down the line. But the match is not much. It's pretty much a glorified squash to get Nails' character over and get him ready for the inevitable showdown with the 3B. B-Cubed, the Big Boss Man, BBM. So, So that's not much more to say there. Interesting character, though. Would you have thought that now... I would have thought that this character could have been hotter in, like, 91.
Yeah, I think it's about a year too late. Boss Man was kind of tapering off at this point.
Still getting hot pops from the crowd.
Yeah.
But not, again, Boss Man, another guy who has now become caught in the groundswell of, you know, the old guard kind of sliding off and the new guard coming in.
Which is too bad because he wasn't really a roid guy or anything like that where they start to flesh out at this point.
No, not at all. And
it's
again,
kind of surprising they let him walk when they do.
Absolutely, and he's still getting good pops from the crowd. So it's not like it's not like he was fading or anything. Very disappointing. Very disappointing.
Yep. So this is the first SummerSlam he misses though since his debut in '88.
Yes, that is exactly true. So there's your second match at SummerSlam 92.
Nails runs right through Virgil. 3 minutes, 16 seconds. Finishes him with the choke.
Yes.
So Virgil, unfortunately, cannot get revenge for his buddy. So now we'll see. Can the boss man return and take out Nails?
Yes. Incidentally, just to let everyone know, as I do, I try to remember most for the most part when we do our vintage vaults, I will let you know where any of these matches are on DVD compilations. And, of course, I use our wonderful friend Graham Coffin's History of WWE.com website. The first match, Legion of Doom and Money Inc. is on a couple of DVDs. It's on, obviously, it's on the Road Warriors DVD. It's also on the Allied Powers DVD, which is that great three disc. You have that, right? Did you get that?
No, I don't think I ever did.
Oh, you should definitely get it. I'm sure it's not expensive now. The three disc about great tag teams, very very good, very very good good set, and that's on that match is on there. This match, of course, is not. So, our next match is a match that, believe it or not, I was really looking forward to just because of not just the work rate part of it, but just the weird crowd dichotomy.
Yes.
Involved here. The match is a guy who we really haven't seen. We haven't seen focused on a show in a while, almost a year and a half, and that is the model Rick Martel.
Mm-hmm.
Who we really haven't seen in a big match since losing the blindfold match.
Well, he was at this past WrestleMania, but yeah, not a big match.
Just well, that's right. Yeah, he was at the past WrestleMania against Tatanka.
Yep.
And but really, I mean, who remembers it? You even I listened to our podcast today, and we were both saying that it's you remember it, of course, because it was your guy's first match. But
obviously,
but the last real major match for Martel was losing the blindfold match to Jake at WrestleMania 7.
We forgot to mention it. WrestleMania 8, he had his new outfit on, the pink.
Ah, yes.
And the short
hair. I like the pink tights, yes. And the short hair. Was he starting to wear the beret?
I think he has that by this show. I don't think he had that at 8, but by now he's got the beret and like the kind of the French sailor outlook.
Yeah.
He was definitely interesting looking by this point.
Yes. Still in great shape, still a great wrestler.
Yes.
And he takes on the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. And this feud goes back to...
a few weeks.
Yeah, really, it's not that much.
Well, again, this is two other guys that were embroiled in other feuds throughout the summer of 92. And then this other feud just crops up a couple weeks before. Martel was still feuding with Tatanka throughout May and June. And Shawn had his eyes on the IC title. And that seemed to be his main focus. So, kind of weird.
He wrestled a couple matches with Brett in the summertime.
Yeah, on house shows and stuff.
Yeah, in fact, I think a couple of them were on that new
Brett and Shawn
DVD set that's coming out. Yeah. So.
And then Martel actually had an IC title match with Brett on Superstars, and Shawn came out and interfered and cost Martel the match after the feud had already started.
Right. So very strange.
Yeah, it basically started Martel trying to catch the eye of Sherry. And basically trying to steal her from Shawn, and Sherry seemed kind of confused. She didn't know who to pick. And so they started fighting, and Sherry said, you know, she didn't want them to fight, but if they had to, they weren't allowed to hit each other in the face because they're both so good-looking. She didn't want them to ruin either of their faces. So the stip here is that they cannot punch each other in the face. And that plays into the match a little bit early on. So
yes, it does. It does.
And it kind of hampers the match, honestly.
Yeah, it does. It probably could have been better, but I honestly really like this match. I enjoyed the pace of it. It was challenging for two guys to not throw punches. And I think they would end up throwing punches later.
Yeah, at the end they do, and then Sherry faints because they start hitting each other. And then they just both try and help Sherry to the back. And she actually she takes some nasty bumps at one point. Like, I think Shawn's holding her, Martel hits her from behind, and they both go flying. And and of course, then they dump water on her to wake her up and fight to the back. So she ends up being left alone while they fight.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of a weak ending. I don't know whose idea this match was. It was kind of a unique concept to come up with two heels.
Yeah, it really
at
was.
At a time, they didn't really do this kind of stuff, so.
Yeah. The funny thing is, if this was, say, even 4 years later, I think this match would have been even better, because by then, of course, Shawn becomes, of course, an exceptional in-ring talent, and I think he'd have been very creative and funny, entertaining, and not being able to hit Sherry. So Martel in the face.
This whole card is actually kind of unique. We got two face versus face matches and a heel versus heel match. Very odd for this time frame.
Did it seem like, I'm trying to remember, Did it seem like Martel was maybe getting the lean of the face pops?
Yeah, they definitely positioned him more as the face in this match, for sure.
Yeah.
I thought he was turning face at the time. I remember definitely thinking that. Like,
I thought so, too.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like a face turn for Martel.
Yeah, I thought so, too. But, alas, that wouldn't happen. And the match ends in a double count out. And as mentioned, Justin and I say that they try and both help her up. She faints because they finally start punching each other in the face. And then they both start knocking each other out and dumping each other in the ring. It just becomes such a train wreck.
Yeah.
It's
too bad. I think given more time and with a less hokey storyline, they really could have a good match. But as it is, it's still good, even with all the restrictions around it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely good. I mean, we both gave it a 3, which means it's better than average. But again, the stipulation kind of hampers some of the pace, but still not a bad match. Still not a bad match at all. So double count out between Martel and Sean. And in reality, they really never finished this feud.
No, that's it. They just go to, like, they don't even talk about each other after the show. It's very weird. This whole show is just a bizarre show. It's just, I mean, it's a great show, but it's very fucked up. Like,
yeah.
The feuds building up to it don't happen. And then the next day, a lot of the feuds are forgotten. It's just very odd.
Yeah, very strange. So, and this match is not on any
time warp.
Yeah, pretty much it is. And this match is not on any other DVDs, other than the SummerSlam DVD that came out in the, you know, in the cooler. Okay, let's see.
Tag title action.
You are up next, my friend, and now. Now,
I haven't got to play that song yet.
I know, but let's clarify. As much maybe in yours and Jim's and Matt Rotella's wet dreams, you think these guys are the tag team champions. But alas, they were not.
They should have been. No. The tag team champions are the team that Jimmy Hart screwed back in February when Money Inc. was given the title shot, and that is the Natural Disasters, Earthquake, and Typhoon.
Yep.
They've actually kind of turned into a nice little face team, surprisingly enough.
Yeah, two happy-go-lucky big guys. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Seeing Earthquake smile all the time, and it's just so strange.
Yeah, it's a rare style we didn't see a lot of, having the big, giant faces. So, you know, usually the giants are the heels, so it's kind of unique to see that happen.
Now, we don't have a date.
I'm looking it up right now, actually.
Once before. It's in July. We don't have a place either.
It's Regina, isn't it?
No, that's where it's Regina, not Regina. But no, that's when they lost.
Are you sure? I thought it was Regina.
I thought it was Regina.
No. Canadian fans, correct.
Saying Regina.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Regina. I don't think it's Regina.
Okay. But that's where they lost them, not where they won them.
They actually won them in Worcester on July 20th.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, so that's right. I knew that. You know, that match is actually on. Oh, no. You know what? The follow up match is on a Coliseum video I have. The match where Money Inc. won them back.
I like how we were stalling looking for this just so you could play the rest of the theme song.
It's an awesome theme song. So.
Yes,
Disasters, win the titles in Worcester, Mass. On July 20th, and they are the new champions. Money Inc., of course. That was a kind of a good feud they had throughout the spring and summer. Disasters finally get their win. Kind of odd they did it on a house show, but that was the time, I guess.
Yeah.
Also odd that they didn't do Disasters Money Inc. rematch here. Kind of weird that they shoehorned the Beverlys in. And even weirder is that the Beverlys were feuding intensely with the LOD over the summer. So I don't get why they don't do LOD Beverly's and Disasters Money Inc. here. They're very odd choices on the show. Very odd.
Hmm.
The Beverly's LOD feud is actually very good. Beverly's kept taunting them, calling them the Legion of Sissies, and pretending that they were girls and little bitches, and they were they'd finger paint the jobbers after they beat them and paint like LOD paint on them, and then put LOS for Legion of Sissies, and it was pretty good stuff. And Genius would take shots at Paul Ellering. So weird that they didn't have that match here. I don't know why this card was constructed.
Flip
the way flopped
them. Yeah. They would do that a lot over the next over the future years.
Hmm.
One of the most glaring examples of this in the Attitude Era was when Billy Gunn was going after the Intercontinental title, Road Dogg was going after the Hardcore title, and by WrestleMania 15 they won each other's titles.
Yeah.
Very strange. So it's not the last time that they would pull some epileptic booking snafu.
But just at the time, this was different.
Yeah,
they didn't usually do stuff like this, really.
Yeah. I like this match because, I don't know, I just like seeing the two happy-go-lucky fat guys. Mm. I don't know, it was weird. It was weird seeing Earthquake smiling all the time and giggling. And it's like when Big Show's a baby face, and he's like smiling all the time and laughing and high-fiving. It just looks so strange.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun, you know? I mean, it's better to see him, Typhoon smiling again like he was smiling when he was Tugboat. But you know. I like the match. I don't dislike the Beverly Brothers.
I like the match as well for what it is. I just don't really understand why they had it, but whatever. I mean, I'm all for a major Beverly Brothers pay-per-view match. And I remember actually thinking at the time they were going to maybe win this, even though when you look back, it was obviously quite the mismatch. I thought they were going to steal the titles. It seemed like they were getting pushed that way throughout the summer. So,
right.
But you know, solid match here. The Disasters get there. You know me, I'm always a sucker for the good pay-per-view title defenses by the champions. So
yes, absolutely.
They pad their stats, they pick up the win and roll on as champs and keep the crowd popping as well. So
yes.
And this match always is a memorable to me because when we used to watch these a lot of times, we talk on the phone and we were watching these before the reviews. And I don't know if you remember, we were watching this at like 1 a.m. or something, talking to each other while it was on. And I remember we were both like kind of fading in and out and like talking gibberish to each other during this match. And like neither of us really remembered watching it. It was very, very odd.
Well, that's when you and I, back in the day, we used to just power watch. I mean, didn't we watch like one every night for like 5 months? I mean, I think we went through like 7 years worth of pay-per-views in 2 months. It was great.
The thing, we were like two single guys working later shifts, so we could, stay up and...
exactly.
Watch a shit like
you would be doing you'd be watching Yankees Red Sox and at 1 o'clock in the morning and putting the stuff in, but it was very funny. But yeah, we used to watch it. But there were times I'd be like, oh, earthquake. It'd be like earthquake.
Yeah, this match I remember specifically watching in my bedroom, and I was talking to you on the phone, and we were both like babbling incoherently.
It would turn into like slurring words, and it was so bizarre. But yes, that did happen.
Luckily, I'd seen this match a million times, so I had it memorized.
Yeah, exactly. So I as well. So, but nice win for the tag team champions, the Natural Disasters. Tag team titles kind of being bounced around at 92. More than it had been in previous years. The stability of the tag titles, and again, I mean, this isn't 1989. The tag division is not, spectacular by any stretch.
No, and we were talking about this before on the phone. Jimmy Hart was like the key to the tag division.
Yes.
During these couple of years, he kind of kept things going. He's not involved here, but he kind of indirectly is because he's the reason the Disasters have faced champions. So
no, every team would cycle from heel to face because of Jimmy.
Yep.
Yeah, they would feel screwed. They deserve a title shot. He wouldn't give it to them, and.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And then it would, lead to chaos. So, but the Natural Disasters, just like the Hart Foundation and just like eventually the Nasty Boys, I guess. Well, no, I guess I won the belt, but they do get their just desserts. Leave Jimmy and end up becoming tag champions.
All right. Let's move on. We have, speaking of tag teams and legendary tag teams, we have the split of one here, although it's not really referenced.
Yep.
This, sadly, would be the final pay per view of Barry Darso. Who, of course, portrays Repo Man, who faces his former Demolition teammate, Crush, here.
Yes.
Let's start with Repo, though.
Yeah.
He will be in the 93 Rumble, but this is his final, basically singles match.
Right.
He would lead the promotion in the summer of 93, eventually pop up in WCW in 1994 as the Blacktop Bully. He would show up in the crowd heckling wrestlers before becoming a wrestler himself. He had a pretty good run as a tag team with Bunkhouse Buck. He was eventually fired in 1995 because him and Dustin Rhodes bladed when they were not supposed to. He was eventually brought back and did some various gimmicks. Most notably, it was a golf gimmick where his name, Payne Stewart, P-A-Y-N-E, I'm sorry, P-A-I-N.
I-N, yeah.
Yeah.
Payne was the real Payne Stewart.
Or, he might have been Stewart Payne. I think that's what it was. And then the real Payne Stewart passed away.
Yeah, died in a
plane crash. He changed his name to Barry Hole-in-One Darso. And he would be one of the more prolific jobbers on WCW Saturday Night during the dying years of that promotion. So that's right. It. Former Smash is done. We'll not see him again.
Yes. And I remember watching that the pay-per-view in question, that this whole blading thing with Dustin Rhodes was actually Uncensored 95. And they were wrestling in the back of a pickup truck that was moving. And and they bladed. And they both got in trouble for it. And actually, Dustin would be fired. From WCW.
Yeah, they both got
that.
Fired. Yep.
They both got fired.
Yep.
And we don't know what happened. We knew what happened to Barry Darso, but we definitely know what happened to Dustin after that. Yes. And we'll, of course, get to that down the line. Bummer, because Smash was one of my favorites. And
Repo Man was awesome.
Yeah, and so was Repo. He was just good at everything. He's a very underrated personality.
Yeah.
Even
those jobber gimmicks he did in WCW were good. I mean, Blacktop Bully was legit funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Hole-in-One was pretty good for a Saturday Night Jobber as well.
Yeah, so...
He'd putt in the ring before matches and stuff. It was good.
Did he really? I forgot about that. Yeah, so tough one here to swallow. We lose one of our favorites, Barry Darso, from the WWF ring.
Yep, and now he goes on to fight Crush here. Mm-hmm. In the spring, we saw new vignettes of this guy Crush in a junkyard, and I don't think they referenced at all that he was the former Demolition Crush.
Probably not.
He had a new look. He had a longer, lightened blonde hair, neon tights, no more spikes, no more face paint. And usually he'd be in a junkyard crushing random things, saying he liked to crush things. And we'd get like little flashback clips of him as a kid crushing things. And that was pretty much all there was to the build up to him. And on 5'9 Superstars, he made his re-debut, defeating Kato.
Yes.
In under 2 minutes. So.
I was going to set you up for that. I was hoping you would not miss that.
Sorry.
Kato!
So that's it. Crush is back. He's a new happy-go-lucky face.
Yeah, and I liked his tights. I did like the whole orange. You know.
They were crazy. Yeah, his whole look for the next year for him is whacked out.
Yeah.
Neon orange, purple, yellow, very bright colors.
Yeah, babyface colors. Very happy. Happy.
Yeah, he was a happy guy. He came down. You know, this is the year of the happy-go-lucky faces. Disaster's a happy-go-lucky. Crush is happy-go-lucky.
Everybody's smiling. Everything's cute. It's kind of like back in the baby faces of 82.
Yes.
But still fun, though. Still fun. The match itself is...
not much.
Nah, not much, really. They only got about 6 minutes, and it was really meant to put Crush's character over and kind of put Repo to bed.
Yep.
And that's pretty much that. So, Crush moves on. He starts up an unusual feud at the end of the year.
Yes.
And lead into 1993, but we'll tell you who that is later.
Yeah, but I like this gimmick for him, and I liked the Repo Man gimmick, so it was a cool matchup at the time to see. But, you know, they kept it short, which is good. 5 minutes, Crush puts his finisher over, gets the win, and moves on.
Yes. All right. Now, the first of our two main events. This was promoted as a double main event show. Our first main event for the second consecutive pay-per-view. The World Wrestling Federation Championship will not be defended at the end of the show.
Crazy. I don't like it. Well, you had to here, though.
Yeah, very very strange. The Macho Man, Randy Savage, still
who
the champion.
Had been feuding not with this man throughout the summer. Like, this feud was really non-existent until, like, the end of July, pretty much. And it wasn't ever really even a feud.
No, it really wasn't a feud. It was just so weird. Actually, the two of them were not the focal point of the storyline leading up to this match. It's the other two guys that were stirring a big, big, big pile of British shit.
Yeah,
big pile.
Yeah, and Warrior was feuding with Papa Shango throughout the summer. So odd choice. I'm glad they did what they did because the match was great. But of course,
it's a second consecutive summer that Warrior is feuding with a guy that he ends up not being anywhere near at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
it's really strange. But,
of course,
now,
Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage. I don't know if we ever said it for the
world.
No,
I don't think we did either. But yes, Randy Savage, your World Wrestling Federation champion. I like saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I like saying that. Had a good summer, actually.
Yeah, he did a lot of. He wasn't on TV much, actually. He had a Hogan summer on the TV. He just did random promos from various arenas here and there.
Right.
And he would have an active house show run, though. And one of his better matches actually took place in Europe and aired on primetime, as well as one of the costume videos, him and Shawn Michaels. I think it was in either Germany or England. But
you know what? It's on. And then there's an awesome tag match on some DVD. It's not Savage's. What the hell?
I think it might be Savage's.
Think so?
Either his or Brett's.
Yeah,
I believe it's from Smack'em Whack'em, I think, that tag match. I have it on that on costume video as well. It's Brett and Savage against Flair and Michaels.
Let's check Brett's disc and see. 10, 36, 91, 91, 90, 89.
No, it would have been 92. It's either Brett's or Savage. It's on one of them. Or maybe it's Shawn's. I don't know. I know I've seen it. It's on DVD. And it's on some tape as well, I have.
Do I have Shawn's nearby? Let's take a look. I do know that, it's an awesome tag match.
Yeah.
And it takes place.
You know, I think it is Savage's.
It probably is. I don't have Savage's in front of me. It's in the other room. But, yeah, it's definitely on a DVD, and I have a feeling I agree with you. I think it's on Savage's as well. Great tag match. And that's singles, and it's both. I think both of them are on there.
When did
the
Savage
singles match
out?
With 2010? Shawn and the tag match.
When did Savage come out? 2010?
Last year. Justin, of course, checking our exceptional historyofwwe.com, our good friend Graham Cawthon.
When did it come out about? Do you know?
Spring?
It wasn't 09, was it?
Was it that far back? Maybe it was 09.
Yeah, I don't see it in 010. In 010.
010.
Otunga.
Otunga. Boring.
Let's see. Starcade. Legends of Wrestling. Legends of Wrestling. Saturday Night's Main Event came out in 09.
I don't think that...
Yeah, here it is. Macho Madness. Okay. Yep. 6909 it came out.
Okay. I believe they're both on there.
Yeah, Savage and Brett defeated Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. It was actually in Worcester, that match as well. Oh, that was the same taping.
Oh, the same taping as when the Disasters won the titles?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, that's a good show.
17 minutes.
Wow. Imagine if you were in college then. That would have been a great show to go to.
Yeah, no kidding. And then actually the other match I just referenced is on here as well. From
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think they were both on there, yeah.
Yeah, from April 19th, 92, Sheffield, England. Savage defeated Shawn Michaels in 17 minutes, so...
Well, at least he got at least both matches you know, had good time attached to them.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So. Another reason to get that Savage DVD. It's tremendous.
Yep, definitely
tremendous. Now, the background to this, however, there's a flip side to this.
Yeah.
The fact that as emotional as the early part of the show was for me, I still had something keeping me smiling. Even though he wasn't on the card.
He plays more of an active role than half the people on the card.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm, of course, speaking of former World Wrestling Federation champion, Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Obviously, you're wondering why he didn't get a rematch at SummerSlam.
Another curious booking.
Yeah, very strange. Where was his rematch? Well, his rematch would come, believe it or not, the night after
this aired,
but we'll get to that in a little bit.
We've talked about high concept storylines ahead of their time before, like with the Hearts and Demolition and the Rougeaus and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
This definitely ranks up there as probably one of the most high concept angles done at a time when I don't think a lot of people really understood what the fuck was going on.
No, I don't think so either.
Basically, the weeks leading up to the show, Flair and Perfect started showing up on TV and offering their services to Warrior and Savage, saying whoever pays more will have them in their corner to help them out in their title match.
Yes.
And week after week, they both say, you know, Warrior and Savage deny it, say it was neither of them, and Perfect and Flair started claiming that they had, you know, someone had won the services and they had been chosen by Savage or Warrior. And so Savage or Warrior started distrusting each other. They started as friends. And by the time the show started, they had no trust for each other whatsoever. They didn't know whose corner Flair and Perfect would be in. Before the match, of course, Flair has a great promo where he says, you know, whose dressing room will Mr. Perfect be in? Of course, he's in the dressing room of the winner. Woo!
Woo! Yes.
So halfway through the match, the match goes 26 minutes. Halfway through it, Flair
and it's really, and I like it.
Oh, it's a great match. I mean, it's not really as good as match. Their 7 match, obviously, but still no. Very, very good.
Yeah.
Hard hitting, stiff.
Yes.
Halfway through the match, Flair and Perfect come out to ringside, and now Warrior and Savage really start not trusting each other. They would end up helping both men at different times. So, you know, we still didn't know who they were officially with.
I mean, the mind games were just off the charts. And,
yeah.
And Savage and... Flair and Perfect are just like in their jollies right now. They're just they're just enjoying driving these two guys absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And it was just so much fun. I think it added to the match even more.
I agree. Yeah, definitely. The psychology was great. And then in the climax, Savage has Warrior down in the ring. He goes up top to do the elbow, but he turns and sees Flair and Perfect with a chair ringside, dives off the top rope, and they smash Savage in the chair with the chair in the knee as he's coming off the top. And Savage would get counted out as they beat on his knee at ringside. After the match, they would hit Warrior with the chair and then continue to bash in Savage's knee until Warrior made the save. And it was revealed that neither guy had bid for their services. They were just fucking with them the whole time.
Right, of course.
So, awesome storyline. Great psychology. Like I said, a little ahead of its time, maybe, but still very well done and very cool.
But once again, you're also dealing with four guys, and I'll even give Warrior some props here, four guys who were experienced enough to pull off the storyline well without looking like, you know, without poking any holes in it or making it look stupid. You were dealing, you know, you had four guys who knew how to pull off a very complex, you know, like you said, high concept storyline.
Right.
Promos and pulling
off. Oh, yeah, they definitely had the guys that could do it.
And facial features, exactly. Yeah. It just worked perfectly for the two, for the four of them.
God, these two guys really delivered in big matches. Huh? They just knew what they were doing.
Absolutely. It's no doubt about it. Warrior just comes right back out of nowhere and just fits right in.
Yep.
I mean, it's just, as much as you, a lot of people don't want to give the guy that much credit. And maybe he was a bit of a kook. And boy, would he flip out again very shortly after this. But,
God,
but
they would have some nasty pile drivers in this and just a lot of stiff match action.
And the ring was raised, right?
Yeah, yep.
So falling out of the ring was not safe.
Yeah,
it was
a wild match. I got to go back and watch this match, actually. It's very oft forgotten.
Yeah, I don't think
it's buried on the show.
That one's not on Savage's DVD.
No, it's not.
Let me see. Is it on any DVDs? Let me take a look. Check.
I don't think so. Sadly, because I don't think... Oh, you know what? It might be on Warriors, actually.
The FYE version. Okay. I didn't know there was more than one version of the... Oops, sorry about that. I don't know if my mic moved or not. I don't know if... I didn't realize there was more than one version of this DVD, but the FYE version of this of the Ultimate Warrior DVD has this match on it.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but... And again, as Justin mentioned, Flair and Perfect beat the hell out of Savage, bust his knee, and then Warrior saves him, and then everybody, you know, happy, go lucky, you know, post-match giggling. But that was not the original intent here. Why don't you clue our listeners in on what was supposed to happen here?
Right. And now, as we always say, you know, this stuff is based on, you know, rumor, conjecture. This is not stuff we've ever really completely solidified. I Meltzer might have talked about this, actually, on some websites. But according to legend, Ultimate Warrior is supposed to turn heel at the end of this match and win the world title, which would explain maybe why I was in the middle of the card. We don't know if Warrior is supposed to hook up with Flair and Perfect, but he was definitely supposed to be helped by them and eventually turn his back on Savage. Right before the show, Warrior freaked out and decided he didn't want to turn heel, and they rebooked the match. Again, you know what? We'll save the rest of the Warrior part till our next show.
Yeah.
Where
because
he end up after this. Because he's around for a while, so.
Yeah.
And then after that, 2 days after this, on September 1st, Flair would get his title rematch in Hershey, Pennsylvania at a TV taping, and defeat Randy Savage for the world title, winning it back. He would use the knee injury that he gave Savage here to win the match. He hit him with a chair again and then hit the figure four
right,
and win the match. And that match, actually, Flair talks about this in the book. They had to reshoot that match because Vince hated the way it went. So they actually did that match twice on that taping.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Hmm. Vince hated it. He bitched them out when they got back to the locker room. Flair, there's a whole thing in it on Flair's book, so.
Yeah, I haven't read Flair's book.
So coming out of the show.
I read it, but it was a while since I remember it. But yeah.
So a day after the show, Ric Flair now has his world title back. Savage's great reign is over. And Nate is back on top of the WWF. But great storyline, great angle, and cool continuity the way they did it. Having, you know, the knee injury play into the title change.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Before we get to that, though, let's hear what Mach had to say after that match.
Yes.
Champion Macho Man Randy Savage, you had to hear the accusations from the Ultimate Warrior just moments ago right here. They deserve your response. Is Mr. Perfect going to be in your corner at SummerSlam?
I'm sorry, this is before SummerSlam.
I got accusations to the Ultimate Warrior. You have got Mr. Perfect locked in at SummerSlam. Now I know that's the way it's going down.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that the Ultimate Warrior is going to have Mr. Perfect in his corner?
That's it. You got it.
What about this tag team fiasco that we saw earlier on? How can you possibly explain the Ultimate Warrior being attacked by Ric Flair, by Mr. Perfect? It just doesn't make sense.
Right. It doesn't make sense, but it makes dollars and cents. Yeah, now I realize what you're doing, Ultimate Warrior. Well, I was cock-cocked on the outside by the Nasty Boys. I didn't understand it, but now I do, yeah. If I was trying to persuade everybody that the Macho Man was going to have Mr. Perfect in his corner, I too would set it up that Flair and Perfect come down and make it known, yeah, to the feeble-minded, but not the Macho Maniacs. and not the Warriors even.
Wait a minute.
You haven't fooled me. It was a pretty good plan, but they're not buying it. And I'm not buying it either. It's Warrior that's got perfect lock.
Are you?
He's the one that's doing it, yeah.
Hold on, Macho Man. Are you telling me that there was a plan all along where the Ultimate Warrior would retain the services of Mr. Perfect to be in his corner for the big title match at SummerSlam?
Well, you
and
got
then,
it.
And then this attack at ringside by Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect was just a hit to make things look good?
1,000,000%.
So, good stuff there. I'm glad it was actually the pre-match and not the post-match, because that gives you a little hint into how, you know, crazed they were leading into that show, just not trusting each other. And that is from the SummerSlam Spectacular.
Right. Yes. But again, Savage, another guy who just knew how to pull off these storylines right and hit the promos right. And that's why he's one of the greatest of all time. All four of these guys. Perfect. Literally.
And that Savage-Flair title match would air on primetime.
Yes. Yes, it would. Incidentally, on a side note, I was looking on the History of WWE website, obviously our good friend Graham Cawthon, the posters, they usually appear, he'll usually put up posters or flyers on top of the actual review. The original ad that came out in England when you can call for tickets to SummerSlam had Legion of Doom and Money Inc. as a tag title match.
Oh yeah, it was definitely, I think it was announced that way on TV as well.
Yeah, I just wanted people to, I just wanted to clarify to our listeners that. Yeah, I remember that too, but just wanted to clarify that. So there you have it. Randy Savage retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship on this night, but three nights later in Hershey, Pennsylvania, his reign would come to an end at the hands of Nature. Nature Boy Ric Flair, now two-time World Wrestling Federation champion. And that is, it's not really, it's technically it's not even the end of the first half of the show, because there's only a few matches left. But, but before we move on, let us take a deep breath and hear from our friends at WrestleChat.net, because
promotional considerations paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Jeff Pick.
And by
Mr. Freeze, Freezer Bars. As much fun as they are to freeze as they are to eat.
And Wrangler Jeans. But yes, as always, go to our the exceptional WrestleChat.net. Awesome site for your news and notes. We, of course, have a now sponsored segment on our headline show. To go through all of the news for you. You can get our podcast. You can go to WrestleChat.net, check the news, and then hit the link and come right to us right here. Also, they have a message board. Hop on and chat with them. So go to our good friends at WrestleChat.net. Thank you, Lord Alfred, Lord Justin. What was the other things? There was another one, too. Was it Turtle Wax, or what the hell was the other one?
There was a bunch over the years, so I'll have to try and find out some.
We'll have to find some on YouTube, some of the good ones. I remember he did Turtle Wax, Wrangler Jeans, and the Freezer Bars were the main ones, but there was a couple others, I think, too.
Mr. Freeze, Freezer Balls.
Yes, and I think they would use them well after he, like, left the company.
I think they
used them, like, into 94.
I don't know if they used those, but they used the his promotional consideration paid for the following they did.
Yeah, very funny. Okay. We are down to, well, technically three more matches, but we already told you about one of them because it already happened, or because it was cut off, and that was, of course, the Tatanka Berserker match. But two more matches that did make the main pay-per-view, and this next one is the beginning of, well, why don't you intro it? Because it just turns my stomach to have to talk about this match. So go ahead.
Okay.
You can have this one.
All right, of course, it is The Undertaker battling the returning legend, Kamala. Now, we haven't seen Kamala since, what, 86, 87 on TV, and never on pay-per-view.
No.
He returned in the summer along with his longtime handler, Kim Chi, here played by Steve Lombardi over the next couple years, and new manager, Harvey Whippleman, who had been floating around after Sid left in April. So yes. Harvey and Kimchi bring out Kamala, this manic beast warrior from Africa. Of course, he had the moons and the stars painted on him, the war paint.
Yep.
And he comes out and they challenge The Undertaker. And they have a brief feud leading up to this. Of course, as we talked about, Undertaker had a pretty hot feud with the Berserker going on over the summer. So another odd choice here. Not sure why they didn't just have Kamala squash Tatanka and then Taker, you know, blow off with Berserker here. But I'm sorry, Kamala couldn't squash Tatanka because Tatanka had to remain undefeated. But you get my point.
Right.
They could still fought.
Right.
So Taker here has the awesome entrance where he rides down to the back of a British hearse.
Yes, love that.
That's pretty much the highlight of this 4-minute disaster.
Yeah, this is absolutely unwatchable shit.
Yeah, this pretty much starts, I'm guessing what you were going to say, is a year-long dreadful, actually 2-year-long, really.
Pretty much 2-year-long.
Yeah, dreadful.
Well, you could even say 3-year-long, technically, but...
Yeah, he gets a little, he gets a few decent guys in 95. But 92 through 94 is a lot of stiffs.
It's just 2 years of absolute shit.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a real shame because Taker really busted his tail these first couple of years, so much so to the point that he'd become a babyface now, and he's rewarded by facing what? One hideous fat stiff after another.
Yep.
And look, this is not the 1982 Kamala that was in that awesome feud with Andre the Giant that culminated in that awesome cage match.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't even the Kamala that had a decent house show feud with Hogan for the world title in 86.
Or the Kamala who debuted, I believe, with Jerry Lawler, right? Didn't they film those? Was it Lawler? When they said they were filming them, like, in his backyard in Memphis or something, the vignettes? I'm pretty sure that's where he started Kamala.
I know they did, and they also, they did World Class. They did ones in World. You're talking about in Memphis, right?
Yeah, Memphis, I'm pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I think they did something World Class, too.
Yeah,
I think
it was Gary Memphis. While acquiring a new costume in Memphis, Tennessee, Harris was asked by Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett to adopt a gimmick. Harris agreed, and together with Lawler, created Kamala.
Hmm.
So they actually had a good feud, Lawler and Kamala. So
yeah, but he also, I believe he was also used in World Class too. I think Fritz hired him and did some vignettes down there. I think part of Gary Hart or either Gary Hart or
He went
Skandor Akbar's Devastation Incorporated. One of those guys. One of those
characters. Was the Uganda cannibal with painted face and body, wrestled barefoot, loincloth. Kamala wrestled for Mid-South, Memphis, and World Class throughout the early 80s. In Mid-South, Kamala was named the Uganda Giant, managed by General Skandor Akbar.
Yeah.
So he was originally billed as a former bodyguard for the president of Uganda, Idi Amin. And then 1984, he came in as a heel to WWF. Oh, actually, along with Akbar and Classy Freddie Blassie. I didn't realize Akbar was in WWF at that point.
I didn't realize Blassie left and came back. Weird.
Yeah,
I was always a big Skandor Akbar fan. I liked Devastation Incorporated. It was like a mishmash of guys from Gary Young and fucking Chris Adams, I think, joined. Who else was in that group? Iceman King Parsons would end up turning heel at some point. I mean, that guy, there was just like guys. Bundy was there.
Yeah.
It was just like a faction of like 11 guys rotating.
Yeah, you can't beat the old territory heel factions.
No, they were great. They just rotated back and forth. Guys would fade in. Make heel turns even better. But unfortunately, we're talking so much about the history of the Great Kamala because this is not the Great Kamala in this match whatsoever.
No, this is the awful old Kamala.
Old chubby, man-boobed Kamala.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, nothing here. Taker wins by DQ. Kimchi comes in. So pretty much setting up a rematch at our next show, unfortunately.
Incidentally, Kimchi. Did you mention this earlier? I wasn't sure if you had heard. I was reading something else. I wasn't sure if you had said it. But Kimchi is actually Steve Lombardi in a
mask. Yep, I mentioned that.
So, okay. Yeah. So just want to make sure. And, of course, as mentioned, Harvey. We kind of glossed over it when we were talking about the fun facts, but Sid just vanished.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about it at WrestleMania, didn't we?
Yeah, there was there was rumors he was pissed off at his WrestleMania payday.
Yeah. Or he got popped for a steroid test.
Yeah, which that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so, you know, they had big things planned for him, obviously, but just didn't pan out and he was gone. And we'll see him again someday, though.
Yeah, we will. So, there you go. Undertaker and Kamala, an unpleasant 4 minutes.
Yeah, jammed between two iconic matches.
Yes, and this next one, I'm trying to think what match is on more DVDs than this.
Yeah, this one's definitely up there.
This one is all over the place, and with every and it has every right to be. It's one of the greatest.
Yeah,
the
pretty much it's up there, top three if not number one SummerSlam matches of all time.
Yes, and that is, for the first and only time, not counting WrestleMania 6, the first and only time, if I can remember, I believe I'm right, that the Intercontinental title match was on last.
I don't think if you count the Inner House 3.
Oh, the
Backlash, the triple 2001 triangle. Or whatever the hell one that. Yeah, well, they had the IC title on the line.
Backlash what?
2001? Was that the one where they had all the titles on the line?
Oh, yeah, all the titles. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. No, I'm talking about straight up 101. But okay. Yeah, you're right. Those instances are true as well. But this is the only straight up, no gimmicky, weird stuff.
Right.
One-on-one World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship match last on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, when this title was equal value almost. Or just exactly. Under the world, but still very exactly. Prestigious.
No doubt about it. Your champion is, of course, Bret the Hitman Hart. Winning it back at WrestleMania 8 in a great match with the Hot Rod, Rowdy Piper. And unlike Savage, and this is not a knock on Savage, it's probably just the way Vince did things. Unlike Savage, who, as you mentioned, JR, not on TV much in the summertime, Bret was on constantly defending his champion.
Yeah.
And
they were pretty much, like I said, building a feud with him and Michaels.
Yes. But somehow, they don't wrestle here.
Of course not. Why would they do that?
No. But instead, Vince wanted to take advantage of the venue.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's hard to blame him, obviously.
Yeah, and the crowd. So his opponent, the out of nowhere, unless there's some battle royal that I don't remember, or maybe you may have remembered it.
No, I don't think. Yeah, I think it comes out of nowhere, pretty much.
Somehow, your number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship is the country's hometown hero, the hero of the UK, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith.
And he's going to win whether he likes it or not.
Pardon me while I throw back my warm pub beer. So we have Bret the Hitman Hart, Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, one-on-one for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship. Now, this is also the first time you really start to see the inner workings of the Hart family.
Yes.
It is now announced, of course, that not only is Davey Boy the number one contender, but he's also the champion's brother-in-law. Married to, of course, the hottest of the Hart women,
That's
Diana.
That's not saying much.
Well, that isn't saying much. The one Hart woman that doesn't look like Stu.
That's like saying you're the youngest of the Criscolo brothers.
Sad thing is, I am. Anyway, let's put it this way. Diana is the only Stu daughter who doesn't look like him.
Yeah,
put it that way.
I'll give you that.
She doesn't look like a foot. But anyway, this is where the real inner workings of the Hart family come out on camera. Now, what I liked about the build to this, tell me if you agree or not. The build to this was Bret's first taste of having to wrestle heel to a certain extent. Not counting his early run with the Anvil and the Hart Foundation, you know, 85, 86, 87. I'm talking about as a bona fide, you know, single superstar, which he clearly is right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time he, as a single star, actually talks, cuts promos, and wrestles as a heel. He actually, at one point, calls Davey Boy in a promo an ingrate.
Yeah. Yeah, he basically calls him out for accepting this match and tearing apart the family.
Yes.
And Diana, of course, would be in the crowd for this match.
Yes. Of course, he wasn't really tearing it up. It was actually, if you watch the Heart and Soul DVD, they're actually on top of the world. The family is so excited about this. And,
mm-hmm.
Definitely, you know, something the fans were looking forward to. I'm sure Canada was excited about it. And again, it was really out of nowhere because before the end of July, this wasn't even fathom this being a feud.
I mean, Bulldog was in the middle of a feud with Repo Man, seriously, building up to the show. And Repo Man cut a promo on a July superstar saying, I'm going to make sure you don't make it to SummerSlam, basically hinting that they were going to fight. So very odd. And then once this match was announced, they do interviews on the weekend shows, with Diana and Helen saying that the family's being torn apart. And then Bruce Hart, that douchebag of force, came out and supported Bulldog, probably. Never on Brett's side, obviously. And no. Owen was siding with his brother Brett. And so it was kind of cool the way they built it up. And Diana kept saying she didn't care who won or did not know who would win. She just wanted to make sure that both men stayed healthy and didn't get hurt. And behind the scenes, there was also some trouble because Davey Boy Smith was hospitalized leading into the show with a staph infection.
Yes.
And there were concerns if he'd even make it to the show, but he did make it, so.
All right, let me ask you this. You're Vince. Let's throw this out there.
You're fired.
Yeah. Say Bulldog did have the staph infection and couldn't wrestle. Who would you put there?
I probably would have went with Michaels.
So you would have had him wrestle twice, or would you not have had him?
No, I wouldn't have done the Martel match. You could have slotted the Tonk over and had him fight Martel.
Thought you would have, or you would have put the six man tag in there with the Bushwhackers and Duggan and really.
Yeah,
won.
I mean, who else really would have been ready for Brett at that point outside of Sean? I mean, that was the feud they had been building up, and there was no other European characters really. I mean, I don't know, the closest would be the Mountie, French Canadian, I guess. I don't know who else would be closest.
Well, Mountie never probably got his title shot back from Piper. So.
Martel? I guess Martel was portrayed to be... Well, he was French-Canadian as well, so... I don't know.
Yeah,
there was really no one else they could have went with. I
Mountie never did get his title shot back, so who knows?
Maybe Bruce. Could have brought Bruce in.
Well, Bruce hates everybody because he tried to restart Stampede, and by 92, I think they were broke, so...
Yeah. Owen. Could have brought Owen in. He's not wrestling here.
Yeah, well, nah, I don't think he had the chops to be at that level yet. Maybe.
Well, I'm just saying if they were desperate, you know? Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
All right, well, anyway, the match does happen, and Brett talks about how, he tried to plan things out with Bulldog ahead of time, but Bulldog was just a mess and nervous and wasn't good at, that kind of stuff anyway. And obviously, once you know this story, watching the match, it's hard to see it. But, I mean, it's easy to spot it, but Bulldog's blown up like 2 minutes in, and Brett pretty much carries him the whole way through.
Yeah, the next 23 minutes. Yeah, is the match still great? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It's all Brett, though. It's all Brett. Brett's pretty much wrestling himself. He's wrestling a big meaty, and you can tell even here that Bulldog's just so bloated.
Yeah.
At this point, and we'll get more into Bulldog as an example of what the end of the year would bring for Vince, the company, and wrestling in general.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah, at our next.
We'll
show.
Talk about that next week on our next vault. But...
Bulldog, of course, has the awesome entrance with Lennox Lewis, who was the boxing champion, big from England at that time.
Yep.
He carries the Union Jack down with a Bulldog. So really cool atmosphere, though. I mean, the crowd is obviously... I mean, Brett did have some support in that crowd, but it was mainly poor Bulldog, as you'd expect.
Yes.
The match is super, super stiff. A lot of nasty kicks with each other. That one sick bump to the floor with Brett comes out over the top and snaps Bulldog's neck because Bulldog doesn't catch him right, and they crumble to the floor. I think Brett said he fucked something up at that point, too. Or he's lucky he wasn't seriously injured.
It was some kind of, what was it? It was like a sunset flip or something, or a suplex that was half and half, and somebody whacked their head.
Yeah, it was fucked up. And Bulldog also gets in a really nasty kick to Brett's head at one point as well.
Yeah, it's on the Heart and Soul DVD. Brett talks about it. Mm. I think it was some kind of a...
No, he went for like a plancha, and he overshot Bulldog because Bulldog wasn't in the right spot, and he like grabs his head and like snaps
yes,
his neck.
Yes, that's
back.
What it is, yeah. Right. Some it had something to do with an on the outside and through the ropes and something. Somebody landed funny, yeah. Something like that. And again, it's very hard. Maybe not in this instance, but it's difficult to grade a match this well when clearly one of the opponents was just done. And if you want to look at the moment, and we talked about it at WrestleMania 8 when he faced Piper, but this was the first match where you really saw. The hitman, the guy who, knew how to dictate the pace of a match. He knew what was going on. He figured it out at this point, clearly. And
it'd be hard pressed to it this time period to find a wrestler who puts on three great matches like he does on these three consecutive pay-per-views.
Yes. Yep. WrestleMania 8, this show, and then of course our vault. Next week.
Yeah, I mean, three legit 4-plus star matches.
Against three completely different kinds of wrestlers.
Yeah, a brawler, a big power guy, and then a fast, small
fast,
guy.
Somewhat green
technician.
So they pull off the, it was a reverse, it was a schoolboy kind of reverse sunset flip.
Yeah, Bulldog drops down to his knees and Locks the sunset flip.
I guess we don't have the audio clip, huh?
No, I can. SummerSlam 92. Some of these shows are hard to track down on YouTube, so.
Yeah, and a lot of this one in particular, because a lot of it's got foreign UK coding, you know, so it doesn't really sound that great. So there's that. A great match.
Awesome.
Mostly because Bret the Hitman Hart pretty much knows what the hell he's doing, and Bulldog just kind of puffs and puffs and weaves his way through the last like 23 and a half minutes of this match because he's done after about 90 seconds.
Yep, and the crowd pop is insane for Bulldog.
Yep.
And then at the end, Bret teases a heel turn, and then he ends up hugging Diana and Davey. So they end in the ring, the three of them. Great moment for Bulldog, for a guy really who hasn't done shit, you know, in a while since. I mean, anything, actually, since he came back. He had the feud with the Warlord, and then 92, he's done nothing.
Yeah.
So to come out of nowhere and have this great moment and win the title here, it's pretty cool for him. So
yes. Go ahead.
I was saying, and we don't even know if this match... I'm trying to find confirmation on this, but I had always heard that there was a chance that this show was actually going to be in Landover, Maryland, if the Wembley thing didn't work out.
Really?
I don't know how legit that was, and also the rumor was, and I think Bret talks about this in his book, and hopefully one of the guys on the board can, or the Facebook page can verify this. Mm-hmm. Bret, the original plan was for him and Sean to have the ladder match here.
Wow.
At SummerSlam.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, so that was the original plan. Then when it was booked to be in England, they changed it. So I'm not sure how far ahead they booked it in England. But I had always heard that Maryland was kind of that backup plan. So maybe that's why a lot of those feuds are changed to this show.
Yeah.
Heading in, I'm not sure. So hopefully someone has more info on that for us.
Do you want to know... Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's it. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Just to clarify, just to really hammer home, I'm reading it on Graham's site, historywwe.com. Just to hammer home the unbelievable effort Bret Hart puts in this match. PWI named this match 1992's Match of the Year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, easy.
That's unprecedented for a match where really one guy's doing the work of two.
Yeah,
really.
It was an awesome match.
Unbelievable. You know, just had to make that point, too. And now, as I also mentioned, it's on multiple anthologies. It's on 1992 Year in Review. Don't you have that tape? Maybe you don't. I thought maybe you did.
No.
1992 Year in Review, the best of the WWF SummerSlam, which I've heard of before, and then the following DVDs.
I know it's on the Confidential one.
It's on the Confidential one. It's on the Bret. It's on Bret's DVD. It's on the History of the IC Title DVD. The three, not that cheesy one, the three disc,
right.
Good one, and the Heart and Soul Family. Yep. So it's on both Heart DVDs.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, great match and great show. Really, I mean. And it's a fresh feeling show. You know, you have some guys kind of filtering out, but, you know, Hogan's gone now, Sid's gone, and Savage is on top finally, and you get kind of the fresher feeling warrior in this role. Flair and Perfect involved heavily, Bret and Bulldog on top. Just, you know, just a nice show. Just a fun show to watch. So the atmosphere is awesome. You know, there's no real dogs. You have two awesome marquee world title and an IC title matches.
Well, Taker Kamala is probably the only dog.
Yeah, but even that's not. I mean, you know. It's only 3 minutes, and it's.
I guess it's unwatchable. Right. I guess the fact that they shortened it, kind of they did us a favor. So we guess we can't really slam them for it.
Right.
Yeah, I thought the show was great. Even my dad, I remember him and I having a conversation afterwards, and he's like, "You know what? That felt different." Like, because my dad was a huge Hulkamaniac. I mean, that was his guy with me when I was a kid growing up. Loved Hogan. But he said, you know, it was kind of weird and different not having him on. And my dad was like, you know, he still thought, where is he? I'm like, oh, he's just off camera. Like, he wasn't doing a movie. Was he doing Nanny?
Yeah, he might have been doing Mr. Nanny at this point.
Nanny Mom or Mr. Nanny, whatever the heck the movie was called. So, yeah, I mean, it was just such a different show, very fresh. You know, just a different vision. Just a different vision of what the future was going to be. And then as we get to our next vault...
Yeah, Mr. Nanny is released in October 93, so I'm guessing it was being filmed around this time.
Yeah, exactly. And just seeing the company so different, and we'll really lay it in thick on next week's vault, how different the roster looks.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we turn the corner to 1993, it's very, very different.
Yes.
So it's a show that everyone probably has seen, and we'll obviously give you the comments in a moment on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
To
have a show, though, be eight matches and have two, you know, legendary title matches, it definitely makes us a winner off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't have this show, I suggest getting it. It's definitely worth worth the money. It's on the obviously the anthology, the little cooler. But yeah, I would definitely find the show somewhere and watch it. It really is very good. I actually have the, I'm looking at the box now, the original. I think I actually have the Silver Vision copy. Let me double check. What is this? Is this the Silver Vision copy? No, it's a regular. It's regular Coliseum video.
Yep, all right, so that wraps up the show itself.
Yep.
And so, as always, let's hit up our feedback and see what our fans have to say.
Yes. Why don't you begin with the feedback on our awesome Place to Be podcast Facebook page?
All right. Now, I just want to clarify with you guys, we will always read your feedback for the pay-per-view reviews.
Yes.
The Facebook page as a whole is blowing up, and we love it.
Yeah.
I just want you guys to know we're not always going to be able to get to everyone's comments on every topic on this show. I'm going to try and pick what I can. But I love that this Facebook page has become basically like a message board for the Place to Be Nation. You guys are all kind of, you know, becoming friendly. We're becoming friendly with you, and we all just go there throughout the day with various topics and thoughts and conversations. Keep that going. Just because we don't talk about it on air doesn't mean we don't appreciate it and want to keep interacting with you guys. The pay-per-view vault comments, so we will always read, except for Brian Samek. So, all right, let's start with Corey Ferreira.
Oh my God, yeah, I'm just perusing them myself.
What an event. What an atmosphere. Despite the Dirty F's downfall in the U.S., it was not on show. You know what? Let's do this, Scott. Let's alternate one after the other.
No problem.
Okay.
That's why I'm getting my throat ready.
It was not on show here in the U.K. Selling out the old Wembley Stadium is no small feat. Opening match sees LOD with one of the best entrances ever, taking on Money Inc. Decent opener with two good teams. Second matchup sees Nails take on Virgil. Nothing special. Virgil puts Nails over and makes him look strong. Our third matchup sees the newly crowned Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels take on the model Rick Martel. Nice match with the two hot throb characters do battle. Only 8 minutes these two could have had a classic matchup given the time. Our fourth match and first title defense of the evening sees the tag team champions National Disasters against the Beverly Brothers. Fine match. Faces defend. Fifth match is a newly repackaged and first of many versions Crush taking on the Big Boss Man. Actually, it was Repo Man, Corey, just to correct you there. Boss Man puts over Crush and establishes Crush as a singles competitor. That's up there with the bizarre Coco Brooklyn Brawler story.
Yes.
Sixth matchup and segment event sees champion late great Macho Man Randy Savage defend against his familiar foe, the Ultimate Warrior. Good match, not as good as memorable as their Mania 7 match, but still good stuff. Seventh match sees Undertaker make a SummerSlam debut against Kamala. Is this really his debut? I guess
SummerSlam debut. Yeah. He wasn't it. Obviously, 90. He hadn't been there yet. 91. He was not there. He was.
Yeah. Weird to
think. This is his first SummerSlam match. Yeah.
Nothing special at all. Taker wins in quick fashion. Now the final match of the night, main event. Bret Hart defends his IC title against his brother-in-law, the British Bulldog. What can I say? But this one is epic. The build was great, revealing to Dirty F audience Davey Boy married into Bret's family and uses it for the build to build tensions between Bret and Davey. It also gave a split decision for Diana who to cheer for. The post-match was such a great moment. It also showed that someone other than Hogan could draw huge, but it's biased due to Davey being from England and this show taking place in England. Second SummerSlam in a row, which is great. Also, Dirty F's last major stadium show for quite some time.
Okay. Ryan Howard. Soak up that LL Cool J song one more time until 97, Scott. Well, we did, because Justin actually played the whole thing for the first time ever, I think. So, I never understand why Money Inc. lost to LOD in the opener. I know they couldn't know that Hawk was going to bail immediately after, but they were actually going to put the titles back on LOD with a dummy as their mascot. I thought that too. The Nails Virgil pre-match promos were better than the match. I love the Martel Michaels match as the stipulation was weird. It made you dislike the heels even that much more. That's a good point. It's almost like they're putting each other over as heels even more against each other to the fans. Like, haha, we love each other enough. We're not going to show you any punches.
Right.
That's an interesting thought. I never thought of that. I lost my place. Bev's Disasters was a good match for primetime or for superstars, but definitely not a pay-per-view match, as you knew there was no way in hell the Beverlys would win. Crush Repo, except for you, of course, and Jim.
No.
Crush Repo got Crush over, which was the point, but it also got Repo on a pay-per-view that wasn't a Rumble or a pay-per-view that took place on a Tuesday. Savage Warrior didn't come close to their WrestleMania 7 match, but the paranoia between Savage Warrior of whose corner Perfect would be in was interesting. Kamala Taker was short and further the storyline for the next pay-per-view. Finally, I'm sure you're going to talk about Bulldog Bret a bunch, but like many, it's my all-time favorite SummerSlam match. I'm currently reading the Bret Hart book Hitman and was surprised when I read that Bulldog had been smoking crack with Jim Neidhart for weeks leading up to the show. Bulldog blew up like 5 minutes into the match, and I also forgot the match that he and Bret planned out, So all things considered, that shows you how amazing of a worker Brett was.
Sorry, I overall, it was the crack part. That was the other part from the book.
I've got to read his book.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much good stuff in there.
Yeah, you have it. I know Dr. G's got it. I got to borrow it from one of you guys. The show's overall, it was the first show I ever ordered on pay-per-view and would watch it nearly every day when I'd come home from school as a kid. And it was the only wrestling VHS I had taped for about a year. Certainly needs to be in everyone's collection.
Jason Greenhouse. I love SummerSlam 92. Wembley Stadium was on fire all night. Fun opening match between LOD and Money Inc. LOD's intro driving down the aisle on the bikes was great, including Rocco on Paul Ellering's handlebars instead of Scott Criscolo. Bobby Heenan's line, the dummies driving the bike, is hilarious. Crush and Repo Man worked a good match in a battle between former Demolition members. Great heavyweight title match between Savage and Warrior. Love the storyline with whose corner Perfect would be in. HBK's push towards an IC title run continues. He and the model work a good match with a fun storyline. A decent tag title match from classic Bobby Heenan lines in that match. Vince asks Bobby how much the natural disasters weighs. Bobby responds, is about 8.25 tons. When Undertaker, when Earthquake does a cutthroat taunt with his hand, the Brain says that usually means extra pickle heavy on the mayo. Now onto the goods. Hitman and the Bulldog. The build-up was great with Diana's involvement and all. Many have said this was around the time the Davey Boy's substance abuse problem was really bad, and he spent most of the summer battling that issue. You could tell how blown up he was about 10 minutes into the match, and that he wasn't in the best shape. Even though Davey comes out on top in front of that awesome hometown crowd, Bret Hart proved that he could carry anyone through a match and make them look like gold. Without this match, I don't think Bret Hart would have ever become world champion as soon as he did. Overall, one of the best SummerSlams ever.
Actually, Jason, I think 10 minutes is being generous.
Yeah.
It's more like a minute.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Jordan McKinnon. I like this show. Bret Hart shows once and for all that he's the real deal and ready for the main event. The Flair Savage angle pretty much lost all steam when Liz left, and the story didn't basically make any sense by this point. Adding Warrior to a confusing storyline is no recipe for success. The match was good, but the story was dead. The undercard guys did their job, and the Wembley crowd was red hot all night. Holding the show outdoors also gave it a very cool look. A good show that has stood the test of time.
Jeremy Nichols, our buddy. I think SummerSlam 92 is one of the best SummerSlams. The matches from top to bottom were good, and even the two squash matches weren't offensive. Shawn Martel was pretty interesting. It gave Martel something to do after his feud with my go-to guy in the Rumble, Tatanka. The build-in match for Savage and Warrior was great, and I was happy that Warrior didn't just squash Savage, as I figured that's what most people were expecting. Of course, the best and most important match of the night, Bret and Davey, was off the charts. No doubt this was the Hitman's biggest test, and he, along with Bulldog, exceeded expectations. You could tell during the match that Bret was on to bigger things. It would be just a matter of time. All in all, SummerSlam 92 is a great watch today. I give it an A. And of course, shout out to Jeremy's son, who lost his first tooth today.
Excellent. Yes. Well done. And you know what? Your teeth look better than nails. So. Yeah. Usually I like when you like getting this guy, but I catch him this night. The greatest name on the place to be, J. Arsenio D'Amato.
Yes.
Amazing crowd made every match epic! Exclamation point. Even Nails Virgil seems special in that venue. The Brain's commentary really shines in those horrible matches. The three toughest years of Virgil's life were the eighth grade. That's not a choke, McMahon. I can still see his Adam's apple. He thinks Virgil's head is a cricket ball. Now he's kicking it like a soccer ball. Why do you guys think they don't have more pay-per-views overseas?
No, we talked about it.
Yeah, the internet ruins it. We'd all know about it. I'm surprised. I think the only reason they did, you know, New Year's Revolution 05 in Puerto Rico is because it was the same time zone. Other than that, I mean, you know, the problem is you could do it in England, but you'd have to do it at a different time of the day. You'd have to do it earlier in the day. And I don't know if a pay-per-view at 2 o'clock in the afternoon would fly in today's standards.
Right.
So that's the other problem, too. So.
All right, Karen Pollan.
The Hot Scott.
Welcome to my side of the pond. You're lucky it was sunny that day. UK isn't always known for great weather. It's another good point, Karen.
Yes.
A tremendous show that is up there in the top five SummerSlams. I like to point out that on the Tag Classics here in the UK, which is a VHS re-released on DVD, we actually get the three dark matches. The six-man Tito opened the show while Tatanka Berserkers between the last two matches. In that case, I demand we get Hacksaw Jim Duggan's song, but no Tatanka song. He hates a Tatanka song, Karen. We bid farewell to the LOD for 5 years, as Scott cries himself to sleep as the thought of Rocco running Hawk and Animal out of the WWF. Nails is actually an interesting character, judging from the timeline. Bossman was abusing Nails before he came into WWF, and Bossman came in as a heel, so it was Nails the face all along. Shawn and Martel put on a good match, and Sherry's antics are pretty funny. Disastrous Beverly's actually have a fun match, and it's a complete 180 from the Beverly's abysmal match with the Bushwhackers at the Rumble. Crush was awesome. I'll always be a mark for the guy. It's kind of a shame he's a victim of circumstance, because he was really over and could have been in the position Luger ended up getting a year later. Warrior Savage is a great match, but I don't know how to rank this match compared to the WrestleMania 7 match, which is saying something. I guess 7 had more emotion and much bigger stakes compared to SummerSlam. Flair and Perfect were all over the show, and Flair's master plan succeeded, much to the dislike of the Macho Man. Only reason I like Taker Kamala is because it's Taker. I'm a mark for the guy, and while I find some of his matches terrible, I'm not going to turn off the TV or anything because he's a freaking legend and so damn entertaining. I believe this is also the pay-per-view debut of Taker's Chokeslam. I know that Sid used it against Hogan at WrestleMania. Brett Bulldog is amazing, but you can clearly tell Brett's carrying Davey by his hand during the match. While not necessarily the peak of the Bulldog's career, certainly the highest point of his career. Isn't that what the peak means? It proved that Brett was able to hang in the main event due to the placement on the card and the story going into it. Overall, awesome show that honestly needs to be focused on more by WWE. Finally, I'd like to say the hot Scott Roddy Piper was awesome with that bagpipes. He made Scotland proud. That's right, we forgot to mention that.
That's right, the hot rod, yes, exactly.
Before the main event, he comes out and plays Scotland the Brave on the bagpipes. And that would
be the hot Scott.
Yes, his last pay-per-view appearance.
The hot Scott.
For a while, for Roddy Piper.
Yeah, forgot Piper was on there. Do we write that in the review? The written review?
No, I don't think we did, actually.
Yeah, I'll have to add that. Okay, Jared Incel. Wow. SummerSlam 92 holds a nostalgic place in my heart because it was the first one I ever saw, thanks to Coliseum Home Video. Well, Jared, that's my copy on the wall, on the shelf, too. The atmosphere for this event was amazing, and it really went a long way in establishing the show as one of the more highly regarded SummerSlam pay-per-views. Although this is still certainly one of the better SummerSlams, watching it almost 20 years later, I realized just how much my nostalgia elevates the show. In hindsight, most of the undercard is just okay with nothing being too offensive. LOD vs. Money Inc. was a solid opener, but has certainly become overrated over the years. Nails versus Virgil was so forgettable that even the bigwigs at Coliseum Video forgot to list the match on the damn box. I just noticed that. They didn't. That being said, considering how bad that match is, maybe it was intentional. They didn't want to sell this video. They did want to sell this video, after all. The Shawn Michaels versus Rick Martel match always struck me as very weird, and I think the WWF scrambled to find something for HBK after he was removed from the IC title match against Brett when the event shifted from Washington to London.
All right, there you go. Someone else corroborates that story.
Yes. Nevertheless, the antics within the match made it mildly entertaining, though Sherry's makeup job and coveralls that don't exactly cover all almost turned me off permanently. Despite this, I still always laugh at the Nasty Boys' hammy overacting in the interview after Sherry gets soaked. Sags crack on Sherry. Did you see the mascara run off that dog's face? It was like an oil slick on the Thames, on the Timbs. Absolute gold. The tag title match was fairly predictable, as I don't think anyone thought the Beverly Brothers had a chance of in hell of beating the Natural Disasters. Really? It seemed like everybody says that, but really, were the Beverly's that not?
I think when you just look at the size matchup, and yeah, they. I mean, I don't know. At the time, I think it was more hope than thinking they could win, but I remember thinking they may.
Okay. Furthermore, I don't think the Repo Man had a chance against Crush, nor did Kamala against The Undertaker. Savage vs. Warrior Part 2 is like most sequels in that it pales in comparison to the original, but it's still a great bout with a strong storyline involving Flair and Perfect. Obviously, the match of the night is Brett vs. Bulldog for the IC title. This match has stood the test of time and is probably one of my top five favorite matches of all time. I can go on and on about it, but I think the match speaks for itself, and it establishes SummerSlam 92 as one of the more highly regarded SummerSlams in WWF history. P.S. It blew my mind years later to find out that the event had actually taken place on August 29th rather than the 31st, and those three additional matches had taken place. Why these matches weren't included on any home video or DVD release is beyond me.
P.S. Your cunt is in the kitchen sink.
Finish the goddamn joke.
For those who don't know, that is a Curb Your Enthusiasm reference from our last show.
Yes.
Austin Pfaff, the man from Connecticut. Another great event. 92 was on a definite roll as far as pay-per-views went. A refreshing change to not have Hogan on the show as well. Brett Bulldog deserved to go on last, and they certainly did not disappoint. Warrior Savage was a good match with a great story of who Perfect was going to be with, even though we know all along it was a sham. A great undercard. Vince and Bobby were good a team. Were good as a team. However, where was Gorilla? You get to enjoy the Brian Samak novel this week.
Well, it can't be any longer.
Actually, it's not longer. Yeah, he's a little shorter than a lot of people this week.
Okay. Brian Samak. SummerSlam has mixed reviews for me personally. The stuff I liked, I really liked, and the rest I didn't like at all. I think the world title match is horribly underrated, just as a standalone match due to the ending, but the end did make sense as it was all Flair's plan to get the belt back, which he would a few months later. Yay, Scott. Of course. The IC title match I used to like, but Brett is ruined for me in his book by letting us know the shape Davey Boy was in and how blown up he was. Seeing that spot where Bulldog comes over the top on a Brett outside, knowing it almost injured Brett, is hard to
watch. That's right. It was the other way around. It was Bulldog coming over to Brett, not Brett to Bulldog.
Yeah. He fell short. He didn't jump far enough. Right. Yeah. Brett's work in this match, though, is nothing short of remarkable and did get him the WWF title out of it. The Warriors win. Wow, what a shock. This is the show where Animal says he burned his leg on the side pipe of the bike and his tights were melted to his leg.
That's
yes.
right. Yep.
Yeah, that's on the DVD. That's right. That had to be tough to wrestle following that, so I give him credit for toughing it out. Couldn't they at least have lost on their way out, though? Shawn and Martel should have had a straight-up match, as it could have really been good stuff with those two good hands going at it. What we got stunk. Hated the tag title match. They should have gone Disasters Money Inc. for the titles and Warriors Beverly's instead.
Yep, agreed.
Yep.
To give Warriors credit, though, LOD, I don't think they knew at this point that they were leaving, so I can't really blame them for not jobbing there.
Right. Taker Kamala has the really cool spot where Kamala drops the splash and Taker sits up, scaring the shit out of Kamala and sending him running. I actually liked this feud as it led to some cool vignettes of Taker building the casket, and since this was the first time they did it, I enjoyed it.
Yes.
The fact that it was just a wooden casket made it better. Glad you think that. Finally, seeing Demolition wrestle each other was a cool sight, if nothing else. Now we move on to the show of my favorite match of 1992, Bret vs. Shawn for the WWF title at Survivor Series. Thanks again, guys, for all you do. How about some college football love on one of your shows?
Yeah, Smack did write me on the board and ask if we do college football. And I did let him know that I'm not really too up on it. Scott is pretty big on college football, so we'll drop it into our headlines here and there. And as we get closer to bowl season, we'll do more. But
yeah, no, we'll definitely do some updates, Brian. We do have a big weekend ahead. The Irish play Michigan, first night game in the Big House ever Saturday. So it's a big weekend. We'll talk about it next week. We will.
Ryan Schmock. SummerSlam was a great card, but could have been slightly better because of people being left off the show. I also think it was unfair to not air every single match that took place. All right, let's move on to Graham's Facebook page. We have a few here.
Yep, let me type it up here. Let me go to my
history. All right, I'll read the first one while you're queuing it up.
Okay.
Brandon Whitehead. I always thought SummerSlam 82 was one of the weakest pay-per-views of that era. With the exception of Bret Bulldog, which is a solid match, the rest of the card left me cold. Who exactly decided that Crush Repo Man was a pay-per-view worthy encounter? Did the world need to pay to see Nail squash Virgil? And did someone think 80,000 Brits seeing the first UK pay-per-view was going to enjoy anything with Kamala? That having been said, I can only imagine they have made a ton on the live gate, which, yes, they did. I bet the concession sales alone brought in more money than they made of all the house show business during Diesel's run as champion. So, yeah, you'd have to call it a success in that sense. But the product being presented was just embarrassing and foreshadowed what was coming the dark years.
Mm-hmm. This is from our beloved partner and head of the history of WWE, Graham Coffon. It's notable that the WWF, after Hulk Hogan left, drew 80,000 fans across the sea. I think it was a big bargain for them to host the show at Wembley instead of originally planned Cap Center in Landover, Maryland, which was a safer bet. It's the show that sucked me in as a diehard. Does it have filler? Sure. I love some pay-per-view filler. And I love outdoor shows. The atmosphere here is great, and the crowd is hot throughout. The LOD entrance is iconic. Warrior and Savage always had good chemistry, and Bret Bulldog was off the charts. 19 years later, and we haven't seen an IC title match close a pay-per-view since. Side note, the pay-per-view poster is one of my most prized possessions in my, quote, wrestling room.
Yes.
That's when you used to say had Doink in there. And
beautiful mind.
Yes. I'll just do Brandon Whitehead quick because it's only one line. Brandon Whitehead says, Graham, it would appear that our opinions differ ever so slightly.
Yes.
So, okay.
Steve Riddle. SummerSlam 92 to me is a great show. The opener is good with LOD coming in the motorcycles. Sure, we got a few squashes, but they were good in establishing new characters like Nails and Crush. The Martel Michaels match is good on a psychology level. Since they couldn't hit each other in the face, Warrior Savage is excellent, just as good as their WrestleMania 7 match, from the action to Flair in perfect start stirring the pot. Taker Kamala is the only real black spot of the show, as the only memorable thing about that was Taker's entrance and Bobby Heenan spotting off about the steering wheel being on the wrong side. Bret Bulldog is excellent as well, and showed Bret was a main eventer, and it gave Bulldog the biggest win of his career. In my opinion, this is the best SummerSlam until the Attitude Era.
Hmm. Okay. And finally, Jay Hinchy. SummerSlam 1992 was pretty underrated and the only pay-per-view from across the pond. I love the double main event with Savage Warrior and the Bret Bulldog Classic. I also love the stipulation going into the Shawn Michaels-Rick Martel match where neither one could hit the other in the face. LOD Money Inc. is a good opener, and the LOD entrance is awesome on the bikes. Piper playing Scott the Brave was pretty awesome. Undertaker Kamala, while short, is fun to watch for the fact that Kamala was afraid of the dead man. It was amazing that the WWF drew 80,000 fans after Hogan left the company after WrestleMania. Do you guys think WWE should do another pay-per-view in the UK besides just doing Raw and SmackDown over there? The problem there is you can't do it live, because if you do it live, you're going to have to do it like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't think it wouldn't do anything. Particularly, you'd have to do it in this non-football season, because no one's going to buy a pay-per-view on a Sunday in October. Yeah.
No, definitely
it's not going to work. No, it's not going to work. So that's a problem. It's just the time change, and you can't tape it because, you know, the internet would destroy it. So, unfortunately, it can't happen.
So there you have it, SummerSlam 1992, coming from London, England. Hope you enjoyed that review. We will be mixing things up next week now. With football season and us doing these picks and everything, we want to have that later in the week to get all the information and the results. So from going forward, at least through the end of football season, the vaults will come first in the week. So we'll do those on Monday nights. most likely. And then the headlines and the picks will be later in the week. So
yep.
We will be coming back to you Monday night with Survivor Series 92. I'll have the thread up probably tomorrow for you guys to leave your feedback. Thank you, as always, for your feedback. Please continue to hit us up on the Place to Be Podcast Facebook page. Yep. We'd love the discussion. Visit our message board, Bigelow34ProBards.com. You can still get your NFL picks in for this week. So you missed one game tonight. It's fine. You can still make up a lot of ground. Please join us there as well. As well as, of course, the history of WWE.com and on Twitter, Place Number 2 B Podcast. Tweet all day long. Hit Wrestle Chat up, and that's it. Scott, you got anything else?
Nope. We enjoyed the trip on the pond. Thank you, Kieran, for hosting.
Yes.
And back in America next week.
All right. We will talk to you then. And for now, I am Justin Rosero. That's Scott Criscolo. We'll talk to you next week.
Peace.
Draw another breath. Nothing calling. I don't wanna shout, but while we were talking, I saw you nodding out.